what's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill, and I'm really excited for this week's episode. I know I'm always excited about the episode of the week, but that's just because I love the podcast. No, I know I'm always excited about the episodes, but this time I'm switching it up a little bit and I have some surprises for you all, so I'm even more excited than usual. The documentary that we're going to be talking about this week was actually supposed to premiere at South by Southwest this year, but you know, COVID. So unfortunately, South by Southwest did not happen, but we're still showing love to docs that we're supposed to get their festival run this year. We're not going to let a little Rona stop us. But the topic of this documentary is very near and dear to my heart. It's about Baltimore City, and it celebrates the art scene in Baltimore, Maryland, because there is a huge, thriving art scene of dance and music and culture. But the film highlights all of the different creative spaces in Baltimore City, which are often overlooked. And it's called Dark City Beneath the Beat.
Growing up in Baltimore is crazy. People die young here. People get misguided very fast too.
So this episode is going to be a little bit different. Not only am I going to be talking about the documentary briefly, I also had the pleasure of speaking with a very special guest for this episode, the director and executive producer of the film, and also club queen, TT the artist. And I'm really excited for you all to hear that interview. But first, I want to quickly talk about the doc itself if you have not gotten to see it. So obviously this topic is very, very close to me because I am also from Maryland and my dad's side of the family is from Baltimore City. So to have a documentary that highlights all of the music that I grew up listening to is just really, really, really beautiful to watch. And it also highlights all the people who are in the city now, whether they're dancers, whether they're spoken word artists, whatever it is, it just really showcases all that talent. And I would describe this documentary as a truly musical documentary. Like, you get to see people dance, you get to see people rap, you get to see people sing in the documentary, kind of like as interludes as it goes on. But one thing that it specifically focuses on is Baltimore club music, which is like very essential to the music scene of the city.
Baltimore club music, it's like a rush, bro.
What?
Energy.
What?
It's everything. It's emotion.
But there's also great interviews with just people around Baltimore who aren't even necessarily involved in those different aspects of it. But just talking about the city, talking about the culture, there is a lot of B-roll of Crabs, which I was like, ah, you know, I love me some Crabs. But I would describe it, I guess, as a love letter to the city of Baltimore, which I really appreciate because I feel like a lot of times when you hear about Baltimore, it's either The Wire.
Here we go, walk through the garden.
And yes, I love The Wire. It is a great show, but there is more going on than The Wire. Or they talk about the late Freddie Gray.
In Baltimore, where rioting has broken out in the street, this violence comes just hours after Freddie Gray, who died under mysterious circumstances last week while in police custody, was laid to rest.
You know, those two topics just generally are more on the negative side. I shouldn't say negative, but it's more so, it's not really uplifting or celebrating the people who are there. It's just kind of talking about like these negative violent events. So Dark City was completely the opposite. It discussed issues of gun violence, which do plague the city. And it talks about the murder rate. It talks about Freddie Gray. It also talks about how there are a lot of people working every day to change the city, to bring positivity, to help the kids coming up now and doing things like that. One huge focal point and something that drew me to the documentary initially is, like I said, they talk a lot about club music and they weave that music into the storytelling in the documentary. Now, for those of you who don't know, Baltimore club music, which is better than Jersey, better than Philly, sorry DC, but it's better than go-go. It is a subgenre of, it's a type of house music and it's characterized by the drum patterns, the kicks, the hi-hats. There's a lot of repetition. Sometimes there's kind of a call and response type of vibe.
Represent that detail.
Baltimore club music just really gets you hyped. They play it at every family fish fry I have, every family event. And what's great about it is, as I say in the documentary, anyone can listen to it. It's not like it's so, okay, yes. There are some club songs where the subject matter is a little bit like, ooh. But it's really like the type of music that you can play around your family in general. My favorite thing about club music, and not just in Baltimore, but also in Jersey and stuff like that, is there's just some really, really funny club remixes of just random TV show bits. Or just like random phrases, because there's so much sampling, you can make a song out of literally anything.
Oh yes, wait a minute, that's a boat man. Oh yes, wait a minute, that's a boat man.
And so, yeah, it really sounds great. I really love Baltimore club music so much. I'm going to link a playlist that I made and also another like DJ set for you to watch so you can like really, really get into it. And what the documentary does is it includes all sorts of club DJs. And then they also talk about, you know, legendary people in the club scene like Kay Swift and Miss Tony, who really, really paved the way for club in the future and who really made an impact with these huge, huge records that ended up being classics in the city.
If you don't mind, then you get freaky. If you didn't hear, let me say it again.
Miss Tony said, how you wanna curd? Miss Tony said, how you wanna curd? Miss Tony said, how you wanna curd? What's up, what's up?
Dark City also talks a lot about the dance scene in Baltimore and competitions, and there's so much spoken word. Actually, one of my best friends, Emma, she does spoken word around the city occasionally, and she's always talking about how there's so much untapped talent in Baltimore City, and it's just so beautiful and it's so raw. And this documentary does a great job of highlighting the fact that Baltimore is sometimes like a forgotten city. People pay a lot of attention to DC, to New York, to Atlanta, and Baltimore is there, but I feel like it gets written off by the rest of the world. And there are obviously so many talented people in the city, whether that's dance, music, spoken word, comedy, you know, like media, just all sorts of things. And there's so much to offer from the city, even if the outside world hasn't seen it yet, doesn't mean it's not there and doesn't mean that it's not valid. So something that stood out to me was that TT at one point in the documentary was saying how she wants to show the world all the talent in Baltimore City so they can go there to look for people. If they're pulling people for a show, go look in Baltimore. If you need dancers, you need, you know, club artists, whatever, you need DJs, go look there. I think a lot about how a lack of resources due to a number of external systemic factors like racism, things like that mean that certain cities don't have youth centers. Certain cities don't have nice programs for kids to get involved in all these like random creative hobbies and feel like, oh, I can make a living doing this. And this isn't just something I'm doing for fun on the side, but how am I going to eat tomorrow? It's really just a lack of resources, but it doesn't necessarily mean that people are not talented or that people couldn't do the work if they were given the opportunity to. Dark City, I really liked because it's kind of lifting the veil to the outside world of being like, here's what's here. This is one of the first docs I've seen. If I'm wrong, please slide me another one my way about Baltimore City that's like so positive. And it's by someone who is, even though she's not from Baltimore, she was in the Baltimore club scene. So she understood it and she kind of lets people tell their story as well. I wouldn't say the doc has a single through line or main story. TT the artist is in it as well as being the director and executive producer. And she speaks about her journey as an artist and how she went to MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art, and she ended up saying, and she ended up falling in love with the city and wanted to give back and create as an artist and just as a, you know, filmmaker, which I think is really, really beautiful. I personally have been acquainted with her work for a while because I'm a fan of her music, because, you know, I love me some club music. So I'm a big fan of hers and I'm really, really excited for you all to hear the conversation. So yeah, that's a quick overview of what the documentary is about, but TT and I had a great conversation about what it was like for her making the documentary and how it came to life. So I want to let you all hear that and just let her talk about her creative process. Thank you so much for joining me. Would you mind just starting by introducing yourself for everybody who doesn't know you, to say your name, you know, what you're all about?
Yes, yes. Well, I go by TT the artist. I am a multi-hyphenate creator. So I am a visual artist, hip hop and dance music artist, and I am also a filmmaker. And I also started my woman-focused record label, Club Queen Records. So I'm a CEO. And okay, I'm just excited to be a part of this conversation.
You had reached out to me on Instagram about the documentary. We're going to get all into that. And I also want to talk about you. But could you give like a summary? How do you describe the documentary to people who haven't seen it and who have no idea what you're talking about?
Well, the name of my film is Dark City Beneath the Beat. And it's a musical documentary about the Baltimore club music and dance culture. But more than that, I feel that it's a love letter to Baltimore, which in the media, I feel has a very negative portrayal, usually often associated mm-hmm. with drugs, violence, trauma. And my experiences in Baltimore were quite different, where I was exposed to so many beautiful and cultural homegrown things coming out of mm-hmm. Baltimore. So like, I just wanted to create something that highlighted the scene and culture and arts in Baltimore, as well as the talent.
It is like a love letter to the city, which I think is really cool because you're not from Baltimore, right? So can you talk about like when you came, where are you from? When did you move there? When did it become home to you?
Well, I was born and raised in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Broward County. Mm-hmm. And when I was 18, I moved to Baltimore to go to art college. I attended the Maryland Institute College of Art. And this was actually my first time being away from home. Like, I was the only one in my family that was like living out of the state. And it was a culture shock because, you know, coming from the South, you know, things are a little slower. So when I got to Baltimore, like, this was my first time seeing a lot. And I kind of mm-hmm. had a sheltered upbringing as well. So when I came to Baltimore, I just was instantly impacted by the club music. And it felt like the one thing I connected with from home, because I grew up around Miami bass, like Uncle Luke, Two Live Crew, mm-hmm. 69 Boys, Quad City DJs. Like, so when I first heard Baltimore club music, I was feeling homesick. But when I heard that, I was like, wow, this is nostalgic for me. It was something that I connected with naturally. And I would say that that's kind of like what my transition was like, just being a transplant. I felt that, you know, I wanted to learn more about the new city that I was in, but it really became home when I connected with people outside of my college bubble. And my best friend, he was a native from there, and he started to take me out to different places, to the nightclubs and to these different mm-hmm. like hubs and places where creative people linked up. And so we got together and we started doing our thing. Like 2008, I had went to New York after I graduated for a couple years and came back to Baltimore in 2008. And we started, I feel, what I would like to call this new young Black arts renaissance. I feel that when I came back from New York, there were not any young Black collectives as far as creative collectives, hosting events, having art exhibits. And we started like doing live painting in nightclubs. We were at like NFL player parties. Like, we were really building a culture. And a lot of the wave that's happening now came out of us. And I look back a decade ago and didn't realize what we were doing, but now I actually see it. Yeah. So I feel like that's kind of like when Baltimore became my home, really, when I moved back from New York and started to actually build T2 the Artist. And, you know, I found really all like my musical identity and my artistic identity in Baltimore.
Yeah. And so you are a club artist, but I want to, can you talk a little bit more about the connection between the music you grew up with in Florida and the Baltimore club music? Like, how would you describe Baltimore club music to someone who didn't know? And then how would you describe that connection that you felt to it once you were in the city?
Well, Baltimore club music is a genre of hip hop, and it's a breakbeat genre. So its roots actually come from house music. It has roots from Chicago juke music. And it kind of started out more as a sampled type of style of music, which is why a lot of artists and producers earlier on during the development of the genre were not able to really go beyond the city because of clearance issues and things like that. Hmm. So it was later on, like I think, you know, early 90s or so, where artists actually started to use original vocals. And that's when you started to get more original music that was able to be released. And we had artists that now were getting record deals. Major artists were coming into Baltimore, definitely working with some of the local artists and capitalizing mm-hmm. off this town. But we hadn't really gotten to see many of our local talent go beyond that. And that was really a big inspiration to this film as well, because I felt that, I mean, big names were coming and know the sound. Everybody from Diddy exactly. to Kanye West, Swizz Beatz, Pharrell, Missy Elliott, Ciara, like all these artists, even Beyonce, I mean, they all are familiar with the mm-hmm. sound because you hear it. And another artist, Diplo, MIA, the list yep. goes on and on.
Yep.
So I felt like, why is it that there's so many mainstream artists that are, you know, getting really big records and you can hear the essence of the sound, but we haven't been able to really break as many artists out of the city. And I was like, this has to change. And I feel like a big reason is that people are not expecting high quality productions out of the city. And so we started to, you know, make the effort to do that with our productions.
When you're talking about making a love letter to the city and making this documentary, what got you interested in deciding to make a documentary? Like, what was that thought process like? When did you first think, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do this?
Well, it was actually my senior year of college, and I was actually a go-go dancer. Before I was pursuing music, I was pursuing dance. And I was working at a nightclub called Club One, which is no longer there. And so I would work at Club One, and then it was a regular nightclub, not a strip club. Yeah, I would go there and dance. Then after that, like 2 o'clock in the morning, I would go to the Paradox, which is like an after-hour club. It was very underground. No alcohol, but you could just party there until 6 o'clock in the morning. And so that's kind of like when I used to go to Paradox, I saw the dancers. There was one room that was club music hip hop. And then there was a back room that was ballroom and Vogue. So I got exposed to all of that in one lump sum. And that is when I kind of got this notion that why isn't anyone documenting this the way it needs to be documented? And I say the way it needs to be documented because there were filmmakers coming from out of the country who would come and they would ask me and my peers to help them navigate, but then cut us out of the narrative. This is why it's important for us to tell our own stories, because, you know, they're literally not writing that herstory in there. After the passing of Kay Swift, which to add, Kay Swift wasn't even a producer. She was a DJ, but she was globalizing the sound, taking it out of the city through DJing, and also putting on a lot of the greats that you hear, which are men that are coming out of Baltimore producers. She was the one putting them on the radio. She had primetime radio, 92Q. So I kind of felt there was a connection between what she was doing and what I was doing, but she passed away. And it was like this void in Baltimore. And that's when I really, really started going hard with building relationships with the community. And I said, I'm going to make this film. So it took over about a 10-year process to get from just like an idea to finding funding, to having everything go wrong that can go wrong with making a film, to finally getting a grant 2 years ago. And that's when we started to actually like go full force with production.
That's amazing though, because first of all, I think you make a very good point when it comes to telling our own stories, because a lot of times with documentaries you see, it can come off as very voyeuristic or kind of like exploitative kind of. If you have someone who they may have the best of intentions, but if they're not from the community and they don't really understand how it is or how to interact with people, then they come in and then it just gets like, it's a weird vibe and then the story is told differently. So I definitely appreciate that outlook when it comes to you wanting to make that film. Can you talk about the process of making an independent documentary film though? Because it's so hard. It's so hard to make a documentary period, let alone an independent film. You know, what was that even like, raising money, getting the word out? And you said it was like 10 years ago. So can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, I would say that if you have an idea to make a film, like it definitely is a challenge, especially if you're not coming from a background of going to film school. But if it's something that you're passionate about, and you will know, because it'll literally be an idea that will not go away. And that's how this film felt. Like, we're talking 2006 was when I first wanted to do it. Around 2011, I got, I was a part of this fellowship where I was able to rent gear for maybe like a weekend. So I was like, I'm going to just do a short documentary version of it. But then I started putting these teasers out. They were like 30-second teasers, and the internet was kind of starting to go crazy. I got asked to be in a festival in Paris before the film was even done.
Oh, wow.
But then everything went wrong. Gear got stolen. The hard drive crashed. So I lost everything. I lost
Oh, my gosh.
2011, I lost majority of my footage. I did a Kickstarter to crowdfund. So we raised like $4K. And then our gear got stolen, so I had to use that money to replace
it. Oh, my Lord.
So there was some layover time between 2011 and 2017 where I totally felt like a failure. I felt like I'm never going to get to the finish line of this story. And then in 2017 is when this local grant became available called the Ruby's Artist Grant. And I applied to that, and it took me 3 times to get it. The third time I got it.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah, we shot the proof of concept, and we use our proof of concept, which is a, you know, a snippet of your idea, because the idea seems so abstract to people, because I was approaching this from a musical documentary standpoint. So not necessarily the most traditional way you approach documentary.
Yeah.
And so then once I had a proof of concept, I was able to apply for a larger grant, which then we got fully funded, the Saul Zantz Innovation Grant through Johns Hopkins University Film Department. Yes. And we got fully funded. And then after that, once I had a edit and a rough cut, I moved to LA like 2 years ago. And I was working with Insecure, HBO's Insecure, Issa Rae's show. And I was doing music with the show since the first season. And so once Issa saw the trailer, we had a meeting. And then from there, they came on to help us with post-production sound and additional support with the festivals. And so I'm happy to be now represented by Color Creative as a director, but also just having that type of support, which is something that I'm pushing for this film to create with all the talent in it, you know, giving them an opportunity to be seen and have their voices and stories heard. And now we're here, you know. Everything was trial and error, though. I literally, this was my first film. Prior to this, most of my experience was DIY, directing and producing my own music videos as an artist. So I just kind of pulled from there to create the scenes in the film. And I just wanted it to be collaborative. I just wanted to like highlight all the people and artists that had inspired me in Baltimore over the years of my time being there. And it's my home, you know, at the end of the day, it's like where I found myself as an adult. And so I forever is a mission for me to uplift that community and find ways to build bridges so that artists can, you know, learn to sustain themselves or get opportunities and more resources to that community.
People were hesitant at first because it was kind of a musical documentary. And you also talked about directing your own music videos. And I feel like you can see that in the film because there are these like musical interludes of just people dancing or just people rapping or doing spoken word. So can you talk about your choice to do that versus just like a history of Baltimore club music? You know what I mean? And this is more dynamic and it's different and it's like very, very creative.
I would say what made me change the approach was seeing how, you know, Baltimore is portrayed in media, right? Mm-hmm. I could have easily like turned the cameras on, went in the streets, filmed the dancers dancing in the streets, did interviews. But I felt that in order for people to really like pay attention, one, I need to find a way to keep them engaged. And to me, that's through entertaining. Mm-hmm. And that's what kept me engaged, like the spirit of the dancers. And so how do we find the essence of that and then create art with it? So what you get is this hybrid of fashion story, performance, music, performance art in the middle of real life. So there are scenes that we come in and we do these performance and musical pieces, but it's happening in real time. So to see the expressions of the people behind us and also to then layer those things with poetry versus just voiceovers or creating like a mix up of the two. Even with transitions, you know, we use like DJ scratches as we're moving in scenes. It feels like a mixtape in a sense.
Yeah.
And so I just had very specific goals with what I wanted the end results to be after someone watched it. And that was, one, you know what Baltimore club music is. But two, you also can have a new appreciation for the arts coming out of Baltimore. Like Baltimore has a beautiful art museum. Baltimore has landmarks that have been there for years. They have a lot of historical reference. It's not just the city that promotes violence or is about, you know, trauma. And so I feel like that's why I decided to take this different approach, because I really, really wanted people to engage with it, but also have a good time. And the music, it started with the music. We made the music first and then we built the scenes out. And the soundtrack is actually like 90% of the soundtrack we made from scratch.
That makes sense. I was over there shazamming things while I was watching.
Yeah, we're going to be dropping the soundtrack. We're going to drop the full soundtrack also once we like put the film out officially. So you can look forward to that.
You were talking about highlighting the music. And I think part of the reason it feels like a love letter was, like you were saying, because you were in the city and you knew people and you understood the culture. And it wasn't just like, oh, I've heard about murder in Baltimore, so let me go in and talk about that and not about the music. But also some of the scenes that stood out to me was like, it felt like you were immersed in the club with people. Like there's scenes where people, I think Scotty B is in there and he's DJing. And then there's also a scene, it kind of felt like Soul Train. I don't know if that was your inspiration, but like with the yellow background and people are like they're dancing and they're kind of doing a Soul Train line. Yes. That scene too. What was kind of your thought process of that? Was it like, I want people to get the experience of being at the club? Because you did a great job of it. It felt like we were there.
Well, you know, right before that scene, we have the founder of Be More Than Dance, which is a mentorship organization founded by a young man named Unique. And so he was talking about, you know, his experience when he first, as a Baltimore native, you know, started getting into the club culture. And so we filmed that right in front of the Paradox, which was actually the hub for all of that. But the club is now closed. It was an incubator to all of those dancers. It was a place for the community. And it's so sad when the doors closed a few years ago, because it left these dancers with really nowhere to go and express themselves. So I thought it would be interesting, like at the end, the hum you hear, a lot of people, when you see the film, there's sound design involved. So we have like the hum of the kick drum, but it almost sounds like if you were standing outside of the club. And for me, it evoked the spirit of what would happen when you go to this club. The line used to be so long that all you could hear was the bass coming from out of the club. So now that the doors are closed, you still feel that energy when you go to that space. And so I thought it'd be cool to kind of like, instead of taking you in the club, we take you into an experience of like, you know, a decade moment, right? And so we just wanted to do something a little fun and different. And so we decided, of course, to tap into, you know, our influences, Soul Train, which is a very Black culture thing. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to dress the dancers up. A lot of them had never really done nothing like that. And we built the set. And it was just a lot of fun just doing that. And then also the scene with the DJs, that to me was actually a moment to recognize the evolution of DJing. So even in that scene, we have DJs that are on turntables. We have DJs that are on CDJs. We have DJs that are on controllers. And so in intercut with that, we actually have live footage of the dancers in the club also. And it's just, again, going back to this is a community thing. Like, this is what we felt. We all are one. There's no club without the DJ. There's no club without the dancer. And there's no club without the community. And so that's kind of like how the flow of this film really goes when I'm, you know, when I was thinking about the editing, because I actually edited the film myself. So, you know, that it was a very personal. Thank you. It was like a very personal approach to it. And there are moments where it feels very personal, but I also feel like it leaves room for people to go and investigate and learn more about.
It's about club music, but also it has to do with, like you said, with dance and also with spoken word too. And even though it wasn't necessarily like these are people doing spoken word, there were people speaking as part of the interlude, which I thought was really, really powerful, and just kind of all kinds of art.
Yeah. And it also, I wanted to touch on the social climate of, you know, race and race in America and race in Baltimore. So we have these more like protest scenes where we're essentially reclaiming our space, because a lot of the culture is being pushed out with gentrification and, you know, new buildings coming up. And that's great. But at the end of the day, it's like you're pushing the culture out. You know, why don't we have a dance studio that's centrally located in a high, you know, a high tourist area for the dancers? You go to New York and you go to all the other city, you know, creative hubs and major music hub cities, and they have venues that support the development of the artists. And that's what keeps these cities vibrant. So I feel like one of my initiatives with this film is to make that a testimony that we need this. We need this in Baltimore, because there's so much talent there and they need the same opportunities as other, you know, talented people coming out of these other cities that have the resources.
Exactly. Because people like to assume that it's just, you know, people aren't talented or people don't have the ability, when in reality, it's people don't have the resources. Because I'm sure if they had nice, shiny dance studios and all of these places where you can be creative and you can be supported in that, then yeah, a lot more people can thrive and be great in those environments. Baltimore club music, while it is like a really important part of the culture of the city, what do you feel like is the future of Baltimore Club?
I think the future of Baltimore Club is looking very bright right now. What's so amazing about what's happening with the film is it's doing exactly what I set it out to do, which is creating exposure for these local artists that are pioneering this culture, who are doing positive things in Baltimore. I know that a few of our talent have now gotten accepted into colleges, and they have this body of work to show in their portfolio. Mighty Mark, who's one of our, he's our music supervisor, but he's also one of our key artists in the film. He has a studio in South Baltimore that's now getting grants. He's getting recognized for a lot of his work right now. So it's exciting to see that those resources are starting to come in, because people are watching this film and they're seeing their stories. And Unique and I, we're talking about the next thing, which is we're developing a dance competition show inspired by the King of Baltimore. So, you know, there's a lot of conversations happening behind closed doors that I'm excited about. TSU Terry just did an ambassador deal with a clothing company. He's one of our dancers and key talent. I'm just super excited about the fact that as we, you know, climb the ladder with this film, as I climb the ladder as a director, that the people are coming up with me. Like, I feel like that's why this cannot fail, because there's an army behind me. And I'm also, you know, within that army. And it's just very important that we honor our culture and we honor the people that are doing the real work, not just people who are celebrities and things like that. There's so many people that could make best use of grants and funding and are actually mm-hmm. in the streets changing lives. And that's what I, you know, hope for this film to shed light on, those hidden yes. figures in these communities.
And what would you say to someone who, because your story of becoming a director is like, you did so much other stuff that gave you the experience to be able to make such a great film. So what would you tell someone else who wants to, you know, make a documentary about something, whether that's in Baltimore specifically or just in general, who has no experience? Like, what did you learn that's like the most important thing that you would pass on to someone else?
I think the most important thing when you're setting out to do a documentary, especially something that's focused on a certain community, is to build real relationships way before you bring the cameras out. You need to, you know, support, you know, have conversations, go out to eat, really get to know the people that you want to, you know, talk to, get to know the space. Wherever you enter, leave it as. Don't come in and disturb. And what I mean by disturb, meaning don't try to exploit for selfish gain. I think that for me, that's what makes this successful, is that I had to remove, you know, my pride and ego and talk to people that I might not have even, you know, had the best exchange with in the past. Mm-hmm. Because there's a bigger thing that needs to happen here, and that's unity. And that's unity as a culture, unity as Black people. And we need to get behind our history and her story, most importantly. Mm-hmm. And so I found that this film, although I would have loved to have recognize as many people, I think the goal of this film wasn't necessarily to deliver a historical timeline of the evolution of Baltimore club music. I think that that film is for someone else, and I hope that this film sparks that. But I would say anyone looking to get into it, just be passionate about it and be authentic. Like, always be authentic and check your ego at the door.
Yes, that's great advice. And I really like the like leave things untouched and don't exploit. A lot of people need to hear that. What are some up and coming Baltimore artists, or just your favorites in general, that you'd recommend to let someone listen to? Because at the end, I want to link people to like all sorts of playlists and things. So who would you recommend?
So many dope artists. But I would say that the culture that I came out of, you have Mighty Mark, you have Black Star, Rod Lee, Ra Ra. These are like people that I've not only collaborated with, but we kind of came up together, you know? So like, well, Rod Lee, he's more like one of the pioneering, you mm-hmm. know, like TJ Boomin, King Tut, more of the new wave, you know, you got Benny Sticks, Thunderbird Juice Box. Like, I've just worked with so many different producers in the culture that like they have literally, I've become fans of their work. You know what I mean? So I kind of came out of like that era where it was kind of like just now evolving into more of the new school. You got Miss Tony too. Can't forget Miss mm-hmm. Tony. Tony was actually one of the first like vocalists and queer out yes. MCs rapping on club music. So definitely Miss Tony is an icon in Baltimore club music. And there's just so many new talent coming out yeah. too that people have to take, definitely have to check out. We actually now have an official Spotify playlist, and they now have one for Jersey, which, you know, like a lot of people, there's a conversation happening mm-hmm. with Jersey and Baltimore Club. Jersey came out of Baltimore Club, but mm-hmm. Jersey is also defining its own self. So what I'd like to see with Jersey and Baltimore is the coming together, not competition, you know, because it's like, we're all in the same, like kind of that region, you know, tri-state area, but also DMV. So we're very close. We're neighbors.
Exactly.
And now you also have Philly Club. So I think it's great to see it expanding, but also to recognize that it is evolving into its own way when you're in Jersey, and they have their own vibes as well. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll be seeing some Jersey documentaries, Jersey Club documentaries coming out, because they definitely are doing really big things with the sound right now. I would say Unique and Cookie Kawaii, and also Unicorn, they're like really big Jersey Club people, DJ Lil Man, DJ Slink, these mm-hmm. guys are actually doing really big things.
Those are some great ones. I'm going to definitely link to the Baltimore Club. Is it this official Spotify one that has K-Swift on the cover as a yeah. photo?
And you know, we had to actually fight for that cover because when they first made the Spotify Baltimore Club playlist, it was just a image of a stoop. That like a row house stoop.
See, this is exactly yeah. what we're talking about. This is exactly what we're talking about when it's like somebody who knows what the hell's going on in the city could easily be like, this is who should be on the cover. But somebody who doesn't is like, yeah, Baltimore, The Wire, you know.
So yeah, we actually organized because the picture was so terrible. I was like, come on, guys. So I actually organized with Unique from Jersey, and we put an all call out to Spotify. Like, listen, y'all need to put a better image up. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity of recognizing us finally as a genre of music. But we got to get that image changed. And then they actually put me on the cover, which I was like, okay, well. But I was glad to see that our voices was heard. And that's what, you know, we got to fight for.
For someone listening, where can people watch the documentary if they want to see? I know you guys sometimes do like live Q&As and screenings, you were saying. So where can people watch? And also, what's next for you as a director and a filmmaker?
So if you're interested in catching one of our upcoming screenings, you can either follow us on Instagram at Dark City Bmore, B-M-O-R-E. Or you can check out our website, darkcitybmore.com, which is where we post all of our upcoming streaming and screening link, ticket info, etc. What's next for me? Honestly, I'm getting into TV episodic directing, commercials, feature films. I'm working on a few different scripts right now. Music videos as an artist, and you know, as an artist, I'm developing myself and my new content that I'm getting ready to roll out, but also my record label, Club Queen Records, which came out of all of this. I started my label 2 years ago, a woman-focused record label that, you know, really focuses on pushing women's voices to the forefront, specifically women of color, because I started to see the disadvantage that we have and the lack of opportunities forwarded to women of color, especially brown-skinned women. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be the change that I wanted to see. So Club Queen Records, we are growing organically, but it's definitely like, very niche. It's a, you know, woman-led, Black woman-owned, independent. So it's kind of like a very niche lane that we're in. And when I do my research on Black-owned record labels, it's just like not a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a few, but right now it's not a lot, especially women focus, kind of very, very different territory. So, but my main thing with Club Queens is that this is a place where we're not just talking about putting music out, but we're supporting women artists from every aspect as music business, teaching them how to be independent artists and put their own releases together and roll out their own content, helping them get sustainable income so that they can fund their own music videos, so that they don't just have to take just any record deal that's thrown at them, and educating them on how to move in this business, because it is a different set of rules, especially when you're a Black woman. It's not just, you know,
yes.
It's just so many layers to it that I can't even have in this conversation.
Yep, you already know. Mm-hmm.
The next conversation, you know, and I'm learning myself as a developing, you know, executive level creator. Like, I'm learning everything as I go too. So I'm always looking to connect with other women who are, you know, in this space. Like, I love just sharing our space and our resources. And I think that's how we make real change.
We love to see it. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking about the film. I am so, so excited that we got to chat about this. And I'm really excited for everyone to see this film. And everyone, please go check it out now. Dark City Beneath the Beat. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
As usual, thank you all so much for tuning into another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm going to link a ton of stuff in the description of this episode, including some more information about the documentary Dark City Beneath the Beat and some Baltimore Club playlists if you want to check out the genre and listen to some of the songs that we talked about in today's episode. Be sure to leave me a rating or a review if you're feeling friendly on Apple Podcasts, and I will see you on the next episode.